following is Eduardo Ortiz's talk, How Valuable Is Your Work? Measuring the User Experience, from the 2011 Information Architecture Summit. The 2011 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by UIE's User Experience Training Library, with scores of online seminars your team can access on demand. Hear the field's top experts on timely topics and the current design challenges you're facing. Get a free UIE virtual seminar at uie.com/IAS11.
Hello, good morning, everybody. My name is Gene Smith. I'm just going to do a quick housekeeping and introduction. It's my pleasure today to introduce to you Eduardo Ortiz. He's a designer, a Marine, and UX director at Mir Mobile Tablets and Emerging Platforms R&D House. And he's going to talk to us today about measuring the user experience. Let's give a warm IA Summit welcome to Eduardo Ortiz.
Get and that is very, very difficult to answer. Actually, it's almost impossible to answer is when people ask me, so how valuable is your work? I'm like, well, it all depends what I'm delivering on. Like, the client wants wireframes that has one cost, if the client wants research that has another cost. But how valuable is our work before it actually becomes a product, before we actually deliver it? How do we actually measure that wireframe, that research piece, whatever it is, how do we actually measure it before it becomes a product? The one thing that has come to mind and that I've definitely understood is that we need to change things. We need to change our approach and we need to start getting involved. And by that, what I mean is, a lot of times they'll ask us, do you want to be involved in this high presentation? Do you want to be involved in client management? And at the signing, the first thing they'll say is, hell no, I am not interested in dealing with that. I am not interested in wasting my time sitting in a client meeting that's going to go on for 4 hours, and I'm going to get nothing out of it. But 8 out of 10 times that a project goes the wrong way, the first people that I get hit on are the designers. We're told, well, you wouldn't want to do the user research. So how can the project have failed? You're the one that understands the business needs. How can the project have failed? If we are the ones that are holding on to all these knowledge pieces and the project fails, it's obvious that we are the ones that made this project fail. 8 out of 10. That is a huge number. And yes, I totally made that number up. Einstein defines insanity as doing the same thing over and over again without changing anything. So, if we don't get involved in meetings and we keep on taking all the blame for whatever our project tanks, and yet we don't change our approach, we're freaking insane. So take this wireframe, for example. User research was performed. We understood what the client needs were, and we understood everything that we needed to do in order to actually meet what the user requirements were, what the clients, the customers, actually needed in order to use this platform. But before we launch, how do we know that this wireframe gets the 2 thumbs up? That's sometimes difficult to get. Without actually using metrics, it's pretty difficult to get. But I mean, it is doable. We've seen examples all the time. One of my favorite ones is the $300 million button by Jared Spool. It is a fantastic example of how data helps us understand if our designs are successful or not. The $300 million button was a simple problem in the UI when it was deployed. It was an e-commerce site. It had 2 form fields. 2 buttons and 1 link. Username, password, login, register, forgot my password. So what happened was people would come into the site, they would add stuff to their cart, and they're like, perfect, I want to check out, I want to buy this product. When they click check out, instead of going to a screen that allowed them to enter all their credit card details, their payment details, they went to a screen that actually told them to sign in. Most people, return customers, most of the time, they didn't know what it was. They couldn't remember what their details were. And new users were like, what the hell is this? They implemented a simple solution, made it optional, some quick changes. All of a sudden, they found $300 million that they weren't making. So data-driven design has been around for a long time. It's pretty simple. You launch a product, you get data, you iterate, and you update. You always get good results because you're using data in order to leverage it. I call that the perfect storm, because you have everything that you need in order to make changes, in order to make those changes that will actually make the product successful. But how can we do this before the fact? I'm going to show you a quick video. I'm going to jump out of Keynote just to get a better display on this. Question remains, how do we do that before we launch our product? And I'm going to divert from this real quick. So if we have a project that we haven't launched, and we have deliverables that we want to evaluate, and we need to understand if they're successful or not, we can almost use those set of questions anywhere. Take, for example, this presentation. It started well, hasn't finished, so you cannot say if it's going to be good or not. But in the meantime, there are remotes being passed around. So you're already getting value out of it. And at one point, in a different setting, we'll be able to iterate, make it better, and keep improving on it. The point with this wireframe, this was a huge project done by LBI, who I had the fortune of working with. It was being run out of the London office for British Telecom, huge telecommunications conglomerate. We did research. We understood what their clients' needs were. We understood what their business requirements were. We created the most amazing solution ever. It was epic. We go into the meeting. Fortunately, I wasn't a lead on this project. But we go into the meeting, and I'm the one presenting this deck of wireframes. This wireframe was part of that deck. As we're going through the presentation, about 15 minutes in, the client stands up all abruptly, all like 4 foot 10 inches of her, and says, This can't go on. I really don't understand what happened. Was this done by some interns, or is this like high level? I just don't understand this. I mean, who was the designer on this? This is black and white, clearly not the color palette that we accepted. This is not even in accordance with what we need. So I don't want to decide on my project anymore. Clearly, we failed as a team to educate the client and to make the client understand what they were going to get and handhold them through the whole process so they understood that at point A, they were going to see element one, at point B, element two, and that everything was built before we got the project in front of them. before they actually got to see something that was functional and something that they could interact with and actually react to. This is another example that I think everyone that has an iPhone and a Twitter account has experienced. It was the Twitter Quick Bar. Twitter launched this product, this feature on their application, and it was a very interesting concept. It took all of the trending topics, put them in this quick little ticker looking bar at the top of the streamline, and they would update it with all of the trending topics. The first iteration was persistent, so your timeline actually went underneath it. Everyone hated it. No one wanted to use that shit. They iterate. They make it static, meaning you move the timeline and it moves with it. So you don't see it after you move in your timeline. Okay, that's better. And they actually get great usage numbers out of it. But a few days ago, they said, we're doing away with the quick bar. It is not the right time. And yesterday I had the fortune of meeting Kenny Chang. And I asked him about it. And after laughing and saying that no one had yet to ask him about it here at the IA Summit, he said, something that really impacted me, and that actually made me smile because it kind of validated my whole presentation. He said, well, we just didn't feel that it was the right experience. But wait. So it was implemented, right? It was adopted by a lot of users, and people were actually enjoying it. But yet, Kevin says, it didn't feel that it was the right experience. Feeling. So they're taking sentiment over numbers. So we could almost make the assumption, which I will, that a sentiment can be used as a metric. So what if we could actually evaluate our deliverables before they become a product using sentiment? In the case of dancing, you have...
You did it! I told you!
In the case of dancing, you have to communicate early, and you have to communicate often. So, how do we leverage communicating early can we implement all of this into our process? I have no clue. I mean, if I did, I would probably be selling it. So let's take, for example, a typical design process. You design, you present, and you get feedback, and then you iterate. But what if we brought in a middle step in there about evaluation? So we design, we evaluate. If it fails our evaluation, we go back to the drawing board, to the design process, before we move on to presenting and iterating. So again, how do we apply this? Going from the fact that there are no non-numeric indicators that can be used to measure the success or failure of a deliverable before it is actually made into a product, how can we use this? Well, the opposite of that is that if there are no non-numeric values to use, then we know for a fact that there are soft non-numeric options that we can gauge in order to measure the success of a deliverable. I mean, if it is not no, then it has to be yes. So this is the first one. Don't think about approval. You can get your client to do anything that you want if the client believes in you, if the client trusts you. Client relations 101. Do you support this? As a designer, are you willing to put your name on that deliverable and say, yeah, I believe in this. I did this. Or are you the one that says, oh, sure, let's show it to the client. Push on, dummy. Is this right? Let's think that we're back in 2005 and the web is all flash. And you're designing a dashboard for emergency management. If you put flash in there, it's not going to go down well. Emergency management is about getting the right content at the right time, fast. It's not about flashiness, it's not about music, it's not about making it entertaining. It's about the content, and it's about timing. Is it independent? Can your deliverable, whether it is a sketch, it's a whiteboard, it's a post-it note, it's a wireframe, whatever it might be, can it stand on its own two legs? Can it stand without you being there presenting against it so that others can talk about it, communicate, and try to make a judgment call on what they're seeing? Is it actionable? Does it actually let you move from point A to point B? Or is it just art? Does it actually help us move forward? Does it close issues and uncover others that we have yet to notice? Simple iteration process. You have a problem, you iterate, you change things, you go back until you get it right. So, does it help us move forward? And last, and probably most importantly, is it a deliverable or is it a conversation? Just because you create something doesn't mean that it's a deliverable. In other words, a deliverable is not always a deliverable. Michael Carmen yesterday gave me a pretty good example of something that they've been doing at Red Pivot, his company, with Dennis Leiter. And they've been creating this clickable prototype and presenting it to clients, but neither of them are developers, nor visual designers. The clickable prototype in that case is not deliverable. It is meant to allow the client to have a conversation about a specific problem and a solution that they've brought forward. So, how does this look? Very simple. It's simple yes or no card. You evaluate every item. First thing, don't think about approval. It is not about getting silent, unless if you work at a big agency and all you care about is the ticket money. It is about doing the right thing, believing in what you're doing, and being willing to actually put your name to stamp it. It's about doing the right thing. It's about actually understanding what you're delivering and understanding that it is right. My name is Eduardo Ortiz, and it's been a pleasure to spend some time with you. If you have any questions, comments, or any of you want to reach me afterwards, I'm Eduardo Ortiz on Twitter. That's my email address. The slides will be up there at some point. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Eduardo was insightful and funny and good, so nice job. Tell me a little bit about your experience with LBI, and because you worked with them, I'm from Holland, so I know the guys at LBI in Amsterdam. When you work with a team from a different country, culture, do you experience different thought process with those teams as what we're practicing here in the U.S.?
Working with LBI was a lot of fun. Primarily the fact that it was a multinational team working on one single deliverable, and culture was a big part for us to understand in order for us to be able to actually work together successfully. One other thing that happened was either we were doing meetings at 4 in the morning, US time, which happened a lot, or we were doing meetings at midnight, 1 a.m., London time. Most of the time, that didn't happen. No one wanted to do that. So if the London team was working on something, this was a must. The document, the deliverable, whatever it was, needed to stand on its own. It needed to be able to communicate clearly with the other teams for the other team to be able to actually make a judgment call on it, instead of having to wait the next day to make a phone call or set up a meeting.
Any other questions? Thank you, Eduardo, for such a fun presentation.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the 2011 IA Summit. For more great user experience design content, visit UIE.com and sign up for our free newsletter, UIE Tips.